Hey everyone, it's Matt here. Before you skip ahead, I wanted to remind you that if you like this podcast, you'll probably love Puck, where I write a newsletter twice a week called What I'm Hearing. It's got tons of inside analysis, tidbits about what's really going on in Hollywood. It's where I break news and I go deeper on the biggest topics, exclusive stuff that we don't get into on The Town. It's all part of Puck, which is like a digital magazine for plugged-in people. It's got about a dozen real insiders doing exclusive reporting in entertainment, media, sports, fashion, politics, and finance. If you're interested, listeners of The Town get a discount, actually. Just go to the description page of this episode, or you can go to puck.news/thetown to join Puck or start a free trial. Now, let's get on to the show. This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's Feud, Capote versus the Swans. The second installment in Ryan Murphy's Feud anthology tells the story of acclaimed writer Truman Capote, once a confidant to society's most elite women, whom he nicknamed the Swans. Starring Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore, Molly Ringwald, and Tom Hollander. For your Emmy consideration, visit fxnetworks.com/FYC. This episode is brought to you by Hulu. Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone star in Hulu's limited series Under the Bridge, a chilling true crime story based on the acclaimed novel. Hailed as a riveting and heartbreakingly realistic work by the Chicago Sun-Times, and featuring excellent performances, according to Time magazine, the series is for your Emmy consideration in all categories, including Outstanding Limited Series and Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series for Keough and Gladstone. For more information, visit fyc.hulu.com. It is Friday, May 3rd. Here we are, the beginning of May, start of another summer movie season. Again, things are not normal at the box office. The big movie this weekend is not a Marvel movie, which has been the norm for about 15 years now. Last year's big strikes in Hollywood pushed Deadpool 3 to July, so instead we've got The Fall Guy, Ryan Gosling, which is fun and silly and has real movie stars and great action scenes, but it's only tracking to open in the low to mid 30 range domestic this weekend. Not terrible for a movie with a $130 million budget after tax rebates, but far from the $118 million that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 opened to last May over the same weekend. Fall Guy probably isn't getting anywhere near that number, and I think that's going to be a narrative you're going to hear a lot this summer. Unless there are some big surprises, something like last year's Barbenheimer phenomenon, I don't think the big movies are going to be that big this summer. The franchises just aren't as bankable. But what do I know? Obviously, last year we did this show and I predicted Barbie would not be huge. It ended up number one with $1.5 billion. But if box office is down, that would be a big problem for theaters because box office is already down 20% this year from last year domestically. So today we've got Scott Mendelson here for our traditional summer movie confidence scale episode. Scott is a box office expert for Puck, where I work, and he has his own Substack as well. He's very smart about this stuff. We're going to go through the big summer titles, give a 1 through 10 number on how confident we are that the movie will perform in relation to its budget and expectations. Not just whether it'll be profitable, but whether it'll be as profitable as the studios need it to be this summer. Got it? No call sheet today. It's the Summer Movie Confidence Scale Strike Aftermath Edition. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Scott Mendelson, our box office expert, and you've written about this summer, you're chronicling it in real time, and now we are going to talk about it. We're going to dive right in. First of all, welcome.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
So this weekend, one of the more interesting movies of the summer we're kicking off with, and we're going to, you know, go through them all. We're going to give our confidence number, and then Craig is going to keep us honest and keep track, and we will come back at the end of the summer and see how we did. Hopefully we will have a full accountability on this show. That's what we are all about. So let's go to Fall Guy. Budget is $130 million. Thought it would be tracking higher than it is at, you know, low to mid 30s. What do you think of this one? How confident are you that Fall Guy is going to do for Universal what it needs to do?
Less confident than I was a month ago. Let's just say 5. And I can, again, I like the movie. I think it's very good. Yeah. I think the first hour is spectacular.
Minus 6.
And it reminds me of an era when movies like this needed to only, you know, a 3-star version of this was enough to be a hit because right. People would show up for actors and concepts and all that jazz. In fact, that's basically what the movie's about in an almost self-aggrandizing way. That being said, I get why they debuted it at South by Southwest. I get it why they showed it to CinemaCon. But I think the hype peaked way before the actual opening weekend. And there really hasn't been anything that they've been able to do to sort of make it the top of everybody's chitter chatter, you know, in the run up to release.
Yeah, the pre-sales have not been great. And, you know, it's just kind of, I imagine Universal's super frustrated because they've got to be like, what else do we got to do here? These are two appealing stars. Gosling could not be hotter. You know, it's a crowd pleaser, well-made, well-reviewed movie. And, you know, it's just not enough now for these summer slots. I think it's going to have bad comparisons just because people expect a big fantasy spectacle in early May. But, you know, put this movie in March or August and it over delivers. Put it in early May and I think people are going to be like, oh, that's pretty good.
You know, it was a calculated bet when Deadpool moved to July.
The date opened up from Deadpool and they're like, okay, we'll take that.
This sort of is, in my, you know, at the risk of simplifying things, the conundrum right now, which is when people showed up as in go to theaters, that's when you had, you know, original movies and new to you adaptations and high concepts. That the example I always throw out, and forgive me for the cliche, is that in 2005, Will Smith as a non-toxic pickup artist was enough to make Hitch into a blockbuster. Right. In 2019, him basically playing that exact same character is only enough because he's playing the genie in Aladdin.
Yeah, great point. So do you think this will gross more than Bullet Train, which is David Leitch's last movie? 236, that movie got to.
I'd like to think so because it cost about slightly more. I think unless it plays very poorly in terms of legs, I think Universal will do their damnedest to get it over $300 million just as a point of pride. Just like Sony kind of sort of did with Passengers back in the day.
Yeah, I think it'll be somewhere between 236 and 300 is my guess. So your confidence is 5, mine 6. Let's move on. Next weekend, May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I'm actually a little bullish on this one. I'm going with an 8 for my confidence score, and I'll tell you why. The last one did almost $500 million for Fox in 2017. This is the first one made by Disney. The early tracking I've seen is about $54 million, $55 million, which is about what the others have opened to. I think the Disney movies tend to cost like in the mid-200s for the big summer movies. This one, I believe, is a bit cheaper. The CGI apes do not require $30 million fees and back end, thankfully, for Disney. And I think that the success of Godzilla versus Kong, like, people love this shit. They want CGI monsters fighting.
I agree. I mean, this is a franchise where part of the hook is that, with the exception of the Burton remake, which is sort of disconnected from everything else, these movies are generally very good. And, you know, right. I don't love Battle of the Planet of the Apes, but you know, the first five, and now the rebooted trilogy from the 2010s, which still stands up there with one of the best fantasy trilogies of that decade. And this is a sequel to that, so they're keeping the continuity. Logically speaking, yes, it's going to be a big hit. It's presumably going to be very good, fingers crossed. Wes Ball is very good at making these kind of films.
He did Maze Runner.
I have no objection with indie darlings being hired to direct big, splashy tentpoles. I think there's for and against in that. But I think if you're looking for just a kick-ass craftsman that knows how to make these big, blustery pictures, Wes Ball is the kind of guy you should be calling.
All right, so what's your confidence number?
7, and here's why. War for the Planet of the Apes made $491 million in the summer of 2017. Mm-hmm. It needed about $110 from China to do that. It was the only Apes movie that was saved by China. Obviously, you know, barring a miracle, China will be lucky to give them $25 million, and maybe a lot less. If it even plays there. I think it is playing there. The Apes franchise is interesting because in 2001, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, it's in 2D, and this is despite everything being in 3D after Avatar, makes $481 million worldwide, which is more than all the comic book superhero movies that year. You know, Thor, X-Men, Green Lantern, etc. 2014, it opens with $70 million, tops out at $200 domestic, does $710 worldwide, partially because the summer of 2014 had a relatively light slate, just like this summer does, because Furious 7, 50 Shades, and Good Dinosaur moved to 2015, so you had a vacuum. But that film made about as much as the big comic book movies that summer. Captain America 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I think that's mostly goodwill from the first one. People were shocked it was so good.
And you were at a point where Marvel was huge, but they weren't overpoweringly dominant. Yeah. Cut to 2017, when DC and Marvel basically rule the tentpole franchise mountain, and you have War that comparatively struggles.
I think it'll get to 500. I think Disney's marketing, and I think that we haven't seen the reviews yet, but the early reaction has been positive. So the CinemaCon crowd loved it. I think it's going to get to 5.
If that's the set for a success, then bump me up to an 8. But I was thinking, okay. I think Disney would love to have a number closer to Dawn.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, they need it with this.
A lot less likely because they're not going to have China kick it in this time.
Yeah. Okay. May 17th, if the Imaginary Friends movie from John Krasinski, live action animation, Ryan Reynolds stars. This one is very interesting. We don't know the budget on it. It's Paramount movie, so it's probably not a gigantic budget. But I still don't think, I think this movie will open, but I don't know how long the legs will be on this one. So I'm going to give it a 6.
I have been told, and you know, for all I know, these people are lying to me because I never know, that it cost a lot closer to $100 million than anything higher than that. And okay. If that's the case, that would make sense to me.
Paramount, listen, the status of Paramount right now, they're not doing gigantic budgets for original movies.
Other than Disney and Warner Brothers, most of the studios have like one franchise that goes nuts, but otherwise they tend to keep their biggies between 90 to 130 over under. That being said, it's tracking very well for an original kid-friendly animated. Yeah,
tracking about 40.
And Ryan Reynolds, I think, is at the point where he's like sort of like a Jack Black, where he's a butts and seats star for kids. Part of that is, you know, last 5 years, a lot of people watched Red Notice and Free Guy, oh, either in theaters or on streaming.
Yeah.
What the Adam Project was a huge Netflix hit. And frankly, even though there are R-rated films, Deadpool are those are the kind of movies that you can kind of watch with your parents or if you're an older kid. It's not Logan. It's not Joker. It's not Civil War. There are R-rated action comedies with a certain Shaggy Dog sensibility. Now, I think this opens well. And then I think if it's good, I think it legs out because you have Memorial Day weekend afterwards. And that's why this is one of the best weekends of the year, period, to open a big movie. Because you have the big opening weekend, and then you have something buffering over the holiday weekend. So the bleeding really doesn't start until early June.
Yeah, but there's Garfield, which we'll get to. Before leading up to If, there's not a lot for kids right now.
Yes.
I think my kid's kind of jonesing for something. So I think we will be there opening weekend. So let's go to the next weekend, May 24th, because there is competition that weekend. That's Memorial weekend. We've got Furiosa, the Mad Max sequel, and then we've got the Garfield movie. So let's do both of them together. I think Furiosa is in trouble. I am getting big Indiana Jones and Mission Impossible vibes from this one. The footage looked great at CinemaCon, but it looks like more of the same. It has not justified its existence yet in this new environment where it's not good enough to just do a sequel to something we all liked. You've got to show that there's something new and different. And Indiana Jones last summer and Dead Reckoning did not do that, and they both struggled. And Fury Road, despite all the accolades and the fact that it had Charlize Theron, a star in it, that one only got to 380 worldwide. I don't believe Anya Taylor-Joy is a huge star that's going to be an allure here. Chris Hemsworth, sure, but it's not the lead character. I think that one is vulnerable. I'm going to give it a 5.
I'm going to give it a 4.
Oh, and you agree.
It's one of the big questions, one of the two big budget question marks of the summer. Look, we are going to assume that it will be a good movie because George Miller tends to make good movies.
The footage at CinemaCon was fantastic. It looked amazing.
On paper, this is an unrequested origin story prequel to a supporting character from a prior hit starring not the actor that defined that character in the popular conscience, but a younger, comparatively less famous actor playing the part instead. While you are boasting, learn her story. And if this sounds like Lightyear and Solo, it sounds like Lightyear and Solo. It also sounds like Transformers 1, but I'm guessing they only spend 70 on that. So I think it'll be fine.
And we do not know how much this one costs.
I'm under the impression it costs closer to 180 than 120.
Okay.
So, I mean, again, the money's probably on the screen.
The tax credits in Australia are very good.
Yeah. And 9 years ago, Mad Max Fury Road did best case scenario business in North America, got rave reviews, a bunch of Oscars, won a bunch of Oscars. I mean, but yeah, as you said, it wasn't actually a hit in terms of rate of return. To be fair, it did not play in China during a point when that was giving a slight boost to movies of that nature, but it sure as hell isn't going to get a China boost this time either. Yeah. And as silly as this sounds, when that film came out and was part of the fandom was the idea that a film like that, that was unapologetically and angrily feminist with a major, you know, action co-hero kicking ass and destroying the patriarchy and showing that, you know, alongside Pitch Perfect 2 and Inside Out, that yes, Hollywood was getting its head out of its ass in terms of what constitutes a viable blockbuster, that was part of the narrative. Nine years later, it's just another movie. And if you've seen from the summer of 2016 and you've seen the summer of 2023, the worst thing you can be is a new installment of a once was special franchise that's now just this week's court-appointed tentpole. That gets you Star Trek Beyond. That gets you Indiana Jones 5.
Yep. All right, but here's my next question. Does that get you the Garfield movie, which is also coming out that weekend? Fox made two of those movies, the Garfield movies, 20 years ago. I think it was Tom Rothman who was at Fox then.
Yeah.
He's now back making Garfield. Those previous ones did about $200 million. The first one did about $200
million. $200 in 2004 and $145 in 2006.
Yes, the second one did not do as well. And now they're back, the Garfield movie with Chris Pratt, who matters? Doesn't matter in this kind of role?
I think he is a huge added value element for kids.
I think
my kids
too.
Know who he is, and
I know.
Or at least my middle one. I think they know who Chris Hemsworth is or Chris Pine is, but they don't care.
Yeah. No, he matters to a broad audience. No one cares in the Midwest that he destroyed a home in Brentwood for his new McMansion.
Nobody cares that Twitter thinks he's the worst Chris.
Right. So what do you think the Garfield movie will do? I'm actually bullish on it. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think this one will surprise people and overperform.
I mean, with the assumption that I'm guessing it didn't cost that much more than the Angry Birds movies, which are over under $75 million. I'm pretty bullish that it'll do whatever it needs to do to succeed. So let's say $200 million worldwide. Let's be, you know, will it be more than that? I mean, on paper, I would say no, because again, this is a once was special franchise.
No, I think it's going to do $300. My kid knows what Garfield is.
My middle son, who's the most pop culture aware of the three of them by default, he doesn't care about If, doesn't care about Planet of the Apes, but he wants to see Garfield.
Yeah, my kid knows what it is too. I said, do you know Garfield? He's like, yeah, he hates Mondays. He likes lasagna. I was like, oh my God. So, okay, so I'm a little hotter on Garfield than you are. Let's go to June 3rd.
Wait, Scott, what's your number for Garfield?
It'll be a hit, 8.
Oh, so we're both 8. So,
yeah, I don't know if it's going to be excessively overperformed.
All right, let's go to the next weekend, which is another Sony movie, Bad Boys Ride or Die, Bad Boys 4. Budget, less than $100 million, supposedly.
What?
I know. I don't believe that.
The last one was 90.
Yeah, but I think it's probably more than 100. But okay.
Let's say 120, which would be a very reasonable. Yeah.
The last one did $436 million in 2020, pre-pandemic. It came out in January, the highest grossing movie of that year, although that's sort of a booby prize. But the tracking on this one, I think people do not care about the Will Smith slap. It's a franchise they associate with him. I think it will impact his ability to do certain press rounds and might, you know, he might do the Tom Cruise press tour where he does, you know, 520-second interviews that don't involve any substantive questions and a couple viral videos. But I have it as a 6. I don't think this one is going to match the previous one. There's just more competition in the summer. I think it feels like, you know, the last one felt like a return, like, oh my God, they're back. This is just another, you know, crass franchise exploitation. I don't think it's going to get to where the last one did.
I'm giving it a 7 in the sense that I think it will do in terms of will it do well enough, especially if it only costs 90. Jeez.
But will it match the 436 that the last one did?
No, but I think they'd be thrilled with 350, for example. Mm-hmm. Because yes, the last one was the first Bad Boys movies in 17 years. It was shockingly good. It's a strong action picture. It's a solid legacy sequel. I don't know what story they're going to tell this time around that has the pathos and interest this time. Because, you know, as Indiana Jones taught you last year, you can only play the legacy sequel card once.
Right. Well, okay. So we're both sort of mid on.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. I just don't think it's going to break out.
Right. Good for Martin Lawrence. Hope he got paid. This episode is brought to you by Hulu. Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone star in Hulu's limited series Under the Bridge, a chilling true crime story based on the acclaimed novel. Hailed as a riveting and heartbreakingly realistic work by the Chicago Sun-Times, and featuring excellent performances, according to Time magazine, the series is for your Emmy consideration in all categories, including Outstanding Limited Series and Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series for Keough and Gladstone. For more information, visit fyc.hulu.com.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
June 14th. We're going to go to June 14th. That is Inside Out 2. I'm going to go 9 on Inside Out 2. I think this is going to be a return to form for Pixar. It's that old Pixar date that worked so well for them in the 2000s and 2010s. They need it badly. Disney is going to go all in on this one. The first one made $850 million. In 2015, won the Oscar for Best Animated Film. This movie is one of those that lasts. My kid watches it a lot, loves it. I think people are going to show up for this one.
Yeah, and I think it is probably going to be one of the biggest movies of the summer by default. It's just the question is how big.
So how big do you think? Do you think it gets to 858, which was what the last one did?
That would surprise me. Because again, you do have a big chunk of the audience that's been conditioned to wait on Disney Plus, and they have no one to blame for that for themselves. I mean, I tried to warn them in early 2021 when Ray and the Last Dragon bombed in theaters, bombed on Premier Access, bombed on PVOD, and then blew up when it was free on Disney Plus. It's like, stop, you're killing your own brand. But no one ever listens to me.
Well,
until
this is the first true sequel for Pixar since Toy Story 4 in 2019, which got to $1 billion.
Yeah, obviously the hyperbolic optimism is that it plays like a 2010s Pixar sequel and does $1 billion, like Incredibles, Toy Story, and Finding Dory. The slightly more pessimistic, but still fine, especially if it's good, is that it plays more like a Pixar original in that it does 550 to 750, give or take. And if it's good, if the reviews are good, if people like it, then I think they could spin either result as a success amid this new normal. But again, you know, like Furiosa, the film meant something in popular culture 9 years ago in terms of rebutting conventional wisdom, you know, people being seen, yada, yada, yada. This one is just a movie.
No, but this one is justifying itself. It makes sense. This is all new emotions. She's a teenager now.
How dare you, Scott? This is about anxiety. How can that not be more relevant than today?
If they have the courage to make an Inside Out sequel that is genuinely about the notion of a young girl coming of age during the last 7 years of hell on earth, then yes, the sky is the limit.
Okay. Well, so what's your confidence number? That it will be among the biggest of the summer and signal to everyone that Pixar is back. It's got to overperform. It's got to do at least 7, I think, to really signal that Pixar is back.
7 out of 10 in terms of will it erase the last 4 years in underwhelming or sent to Disney Plus Pixar titles.
7 out of 10. Okay. I'm 9. I'm fair. Bullish on Inside Out.
I hope you're right.
I think everyone's going to see this one. All right, let's move on. June 28th, my favorite of the summer, Horizon, an American Saga, Part 1. Budget, $110 million.
Costner literally bet the farm on this one.
I know. He literally bet his farm on this one. I am going a 3. I don't think Warner's believes in this one. They don't have very much money in it. It's a distribution deal. I think that Costner, you know, he will do his best to sell it. But It's a Western. It's got Yellowstone vibes, so maybe the Yellowstone crowd will show up for this one. But at that budget, it's got to do $300 million to really be a success, and I don't think it's going to get there. So I'm going to do a 3.
I'm going to be annoying and say 4. And the only reason I'm slightly more optimistic, two things. A, it's premiering at Cannes. So we'll know right away whether it's good and or crowd pleasing.
Okay.
You know, we'll know very early whether it works as a crowd pleasing commercial entertainment.
Yeah. He's doing that because he wants international deals on it.
Of course.
Some territories are not sold yet.
Also, it may be worth Warner Brothers Discovery to spend money to create the perception of success, because this very much, even though they didn't actually, you know, budget produce this one, this very much fits into their wheelhouse of Warner Brothers being a place where A-list prestigious talent can come and get way too much money to make even non-franchise films, and Warner Brothers will treat them like events.
Yeah, Zaslav is also friends with Costner. They went to Taylor Swift together. So yeah, no, I know. Maybe they will. And honestly, maybe I'm biased just because Costner's an asshole and I don't
Well, no,
like him,
I mean, but I share your pessimism. And yes. 21 years ago, Open Range, which is awesome. It's a great Western, barely played overseas. Let's say domestic. It made 55 domestic on a 22 budget. This could do Open Range numbers, but at a lot more of the money.
Right, exactly. And it is up against another June 28th opener, A Quiet Place Day One. Now, I am actually bullish on this one. My confidence number is an 8 on this. The previous one, which opened in 2021, sort of pandemic-y times, did $300 million, which I think surprised a lot of people given the state of theaters at the time.
I think it was yet more evidence, even back then, that the movies that were going to be successful prior to COVID, if they were treated like normal theatrical releases, would be successful. We've known that since Godzilla v. Kong. We've known that since A Quiet Place, blah, 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 blah. Sorry, carry on. I'm still bitter about that.
Well, and this one plays a bit bigger. It's sort of an invasion movie. I don't know how much Lupita Nyong'o brings to the table, but she has an audience. It might help with different demos. I think this one is going to surprise people and be a hit over that 4th of July corridor.
It's going to be, barring a miracle from a film that we'll discuss later, I think it's going to be the biggest horror film this season by default.
But it doesn't even look like horror. It looks like alien invasion movie.
Yes. And you know, that's good news, bad news. Good news, because it looks like a big, spectacular, big-scaled fantasy horror adventure picture. That's good. It looks, yeah, I don't know what it cost.
Again, another Paramount movie, so probably not huge.
Well, I mean, the first Quiet Place cost 18, the second one cost 60. So I'd like to think this one cost closer to like a Conjuring film, so 40.
No, it's probably more. I think the visual effects of an invasion are probably more.
Yeah, and the second trailer, which was released in Vegas, that's a banger. It's a very good trailer. And yeah, again, Quiet Place 2 making $300 million after as a follow-up to a $341 million grossing predecessor, that's normal, COVID or not. So the only question is, does this play like a Quiet Place sequel, which it is not, or does it play like a Quiet Place spinoff, which means maybe closer to 250? Both would be
not
fine.
Directed by Krasinski either.
It's not by Krasinski. Emily Blunt's not in it. To general audiences, all it has is the title.
Right. So what's your number?
Of it being a hit, 7.
Oh, okay. Let's move to July 3rd, which has the biggie of the summer, Despicable Me 4. I'm going 10.
11.
This. This is as close to a sure thing as we've seen. The only question is whether they're going to be able to match that phenomenon of Minions Rise of Gru, which rode the TikTok memes with the Gentle Minions thing to 940 in 2022. It's sort of an unknowable whether they'll be able to recreate that. But the previous Despicable Me did $1 billion in 2017. There is no stronger franchise in animation than the freaking Minions. So my question for you is, does this one get to $1 billion?
That would slightly surprise me, although I think it's the only movie this summer that, with one exception, that has even a remote shot of getting there. Obviously, China's off the table again. And Despicable Me 3 made $53 million from China. Again, it still would have been a massive hit regardless. Minions 2 made $35 million in China out of $935 million worldwide.
Right.
Now, the question mark is that Despicable Me 3 only made $271 million or $275 million worldwide or domestic in 2017, while the Despicable Me 2, Minions, and Minions 2 all did over under $360 million. So the question is, does this get closer to $360 million domestic or $270 million? Universal's fine either way.
Yeah, those are champagne problems.
And here is one reason why the franchise is so profitable. 11, 12 years ago, God, 14 years ago, we're old. It was a new franchise aimed at today's kids. It was not regurgitated nostalgia. So, and that was part of the gentle Minions stuff in 2022.
Yeah, which, they felt ownership.
That generation, yes, ownership, absolutely. And kids don't care about The Exorcist. Kids don't care about Indiana Jones. They barely care about Mission Impossible. But they care about Minions. They cared about Five Nights at Freddy's because that was aimed at them. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, they also do not oversaturate the marketplace in terms of streaming shows, spinoffs, whatever, whatever. It's basically only in theaters once every few years.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of franchises that may not have anyone feeling ownership, Twisters is July 19th. This one is a sequel to the 90s movies directed by Lee Isaac Chung. It's got Glenn Powell. It's sort of a Glenn Powell heat check, I think, to see if this guy's a real star. You know, it's light IP, I would call it. You know, people know what it is, but I don't know that they have any connection to the Twisters franchise. I'm going to go 7 on this one. This could go either way. It sort of angers me. I know it angers you that this is like where we are, where they're rebooting Twisters. But I think it actually looks kind of fun and people could show up for this.
I am also going to say 7 just because I'm not bullish enough to give it an 8, but I'm not pessimistic enough to go to a 6. So this is, along with Furiosa, the big coin toss this season, in my opinion.
Yeah.
On paper, this is bottom of the barrel scraping, you know, IP regurgitation. Not every standalone hit of the 1990s is a franchise. Face Off is not a franchise. But that's what I said when they announced Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle. So you can find success with these things.
Also, just do a tornado movie. Why did you need the name Twister?
I think there's the feeling that you need the IP, for better or worse.
The IP of CGI Twisters. That's yes. The IP.
Hey, you and I agree on this, but this is where we are.
It's like the Universal has 2 of those movies this summer. They've got The Fall Guy, IP means nothing. It's an 80s TV show that no one remembers. And then they've got Twisters, which was a 90s movie that we do remember, but like call it some other name. Call it a tornado and, you know, call it tornadoes, call it whatever. Like, what does Twisters bring you other than, oh yeah, I kind of remember that.
With the caveat that I'm not talking Barbie, I'm not talking Top Gun or Oppenheimer or anything like that, I do think this is the one that could aggressively overperform this summer.
You do?
A couple of reasons. I do. I'm not saying it will. Because again, on paper, it has a stacked cast of young people that general audiences kind of sort of know and kind of sort of recognize by themselves. Glenn Powell, Daisy Edgar-Jones, Sasha Lane, Anthony Ramos, and like 5 other people. They're not butts and seats stars.
Yeah. By the way, Glenn Powell is 35, just FYI.
Yeah, he's been doing this for a while. I think that's...
I'm just saying, he's sort of a star on the rise, though. He very much wants to be a star.
And if he ends up being a star, I do think a part of it is he didn't break out when he was 22.
Yeah. He's got the Prestige movie, the Netflix movie, the Linklater thing, yes. Hitman this summer. That will get a few theaters, but it's mostly Netflix.
And again, in a sane world, that would be an old school studio programmer.
Oh, I mean, there's a bunch of movies this summer. There's a Beverly Hills Cop sequel on Netflix. This weekend, there's the Anne Hathaway rom-com that probably should have gone to theaters, but Amazon is just putting it on Prime. There's a bunch of stuff that's on streaming. Let's go to July 26th, which is Deadpool and Wolverine, which I am also giving a 10 to. I think this is going to be huge and has the best shot of getting to a billion. That and Despicable Me 4 are the two movies that have a remote chance of doing there. The Deadpool 2 did $785 million in 2018, about the same as the first one, which leads me to believe this one will probably do exactly the same as those two, because the first Deadpool was a big surprise everyone loved. And then the second one didn't do much more than that. It's Disney's first R-rated movie for Marvel. Sean Levy is coming in. He's directing. He's a very commercial director. I think Hugh Jackman is a big value add in this one. I think it's going to get to probably around $800 million.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a huge hit.
So the gray area there is between $800 and a billion.
Maybe. Here's the thing. Deadpool 2, not counting that PG-13 Once Upon a Deadpool thing that made 25 to $40 million in China. I don't remember the exact number. Deadpool 2 itself only, made $318 domestic and $735 worldwide. That's a terrific hold for a comedy under any circumstances.
Yeah, but this is not a comedy. This is a superhero action movie, too.
Fair. Well, all the more then. Yes, then, yes, it did drop a little bit. Superheroes in the abstract are less, Marvel DC superheroes are less overwhelmingly popular than they were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Again, this is explaining why the movie might only get to $750 and not, you know, No Way Home numbers or whatever. Now, the one reason why I can throw all that out is children. And the first Deadpool film is 8 years old. The second Deadpool film is 5 years old. There is a generation of kids that discovered those two films, which again, they're R-rated, but in that Mortal Kombat, you can watch them and not be scarred for life kind of way, that are now old enough to see Deadpool 3 in a theater. And I think that's a demographic that's going to mitigate a lot of the demos that might otherwise be less interested than they were
all right, 5 years ago. So what's your number?
Worst case scenario, it plays like a Deadpool movie, does $750. Best case scenario, it plays like Spider-Man Far From Home. It does like $1.1
billion. So your confidence number is what?
N.
So we both agree that this one's going to be this one's going to be massive. All right, then we get into August. There's a couple of sort of smaller ones we don't have to get into, like Borderlands, the Eli Roth movie that's been troubled and, you know, gestating for a long time. It's a video game adaptation. There's the M. Night Shyamalan movie, Trap, which has a good trailer. I will admit that is a very good trailer. Josh Hartnett, weird that Josh Hartnett is starring. You'd think he would be able to get a bigger star. But, you know, Knock at the Cabin last year only did $54 million worldwide. So we don't need to talk about the Shyamalan movie as like a major blockbuster. Maybe it'll surprise us.
I like to have one ridiculous Hail Mary every season. And this year, it's Trap. I think if it's good, if it delivers on the premise and it is crowd-pleasing, it's going to, you know, you have generational goodwill toward M. Night Shyamalan. It's the 25th anniversary of The Sixth Sense. And I think that the narrative around him has changed because the industry has become so weirdly homogenized and, you know, corporate IP, blah, 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 that even his whiffs like The Happening and Lady in the Water in the Village,
they are
so
original,
unique unto themselves,
yeah,
that they're like, God, I missed this.
Yeah, he makes original movies.
Yeah.
That's yeah. So then let's go on to August 16th, our last big movie of the summer, Alien Romulus. Not an original movie. They're still doing Alien movies. Fede Alvarez is directing, no name cast. I was surprised. Alien Covenant did $240 million in 2017. That's a lot for a movie that I didn't even remember.
However, it only cost $95 million, so good for them, but it was a huge drop from Prometheus, which made $400 million in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the mistake there, and I think this is a mistake that Hollywood still tends to make from time to time, is that Prometheus comes out, it's a big hit. If you recall, it was kind of sort of sold as an Alien prequel, but more or less sold as this big, splashy, original sci-fi movie from Ridley Scott. But instead of saying, this is a sequel to Prometheus, the movie that you liked 5 years ago, this is a prequel to this brand that your parents like that hasn't had an actual hit installment since 1986.
Yeah, it's a genre play. It's just a genre play. You know, they got an Evil Dead guy in there to direct, and it'll be a horror movie.
Yeah,
and that's not for me, but it will be for people. My confidence level is, I'm going to go 5. I think it'll be fine. It won't get to 240. That August 16th release date says everything you need to know about what Disney thinks of this. It's the Haunted Mansion spot, and I don't think it's going to do much.
I'm hoping that it cost closer to Predators, which cost $40 million, than The Predator, which cost $80
million. All right, so we don't need to get into some of the August dumping ground movies. Horizon 2, The Crow.
Minus 2.
Oh, you're giving The Crow. You don't think anyone's going to show up for The Crow. No, I don't think The Crow means anything to anyone.
I mean, I'm sure Lionsgate, on paper, they'll be fine no matter what, because that's generally what they do. Mm-hmm. But again, how depressing that I have to root for The Crow.
I know. Well, so that gets me to my last question. We're down 20% heading into the summer from last year domestically. How much do you think we will be down at the end of the summer from last year? I think we'll be down 30%. I think this summer is going to lose about 10% of ground from last year.
Yeah. And, you know, I could wiggle and say maybe closer to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
But even if everything that we've discussed does well enough on a movie by movie basis. And I think most of them will. The films are so much smaller in terms of expectations, in terms of a ceiling, that, and this is the problem that I've been, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs about since January, which is that this is a 2014 kind of summer, but in 2014, the theatrical industry wasn't, you know, in existential peril.
Yeah.
And it is not their fault. I mean, you can argue that, you know, mistakes were made here and there, but how do you adapt from a pandemic?
Many, many mistakes were made. But yeah, that's another topic for another show. All right, Scott, thanks for coming on. We will have full accountability at the end of the summer.
I don't wish to find out.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's the show. Whew, a packed week on the town. 4 episodes. I want to thank my guest, Scott Mendelson, producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez, and I want to thank you. We will see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.